Let's do some exploring. Our topic is compassionate capitalism, not ordinary capitalism, the compassionate kind. Does that sound like utopia? Strictly woo? Is it even possible? Let's dig in. Today we're going to talk about the beginning of time for the climate change crisis. Up to now, we've covered five generations up to the year 1969. And we've done that because it is vital we all start with the same base level of knowledge. And I like to start at the 75,000 foot level. At the beginning of the 70s, the greatest generation was beginning to retire. The silent generation was in their early 40s. The oldest boomers were finishing university. The oldest Jones starting high school. And Generation X, they're in their crib. We can agree that universally, every generation is focused on succeeding and making a better life for the following generation. For the males in the 70s, that meant a house, a car, a TV, maybe a cottage, a boat, or some other outward-focusing tangible sign of success. Naturally, the male contingent was all about a decent and well-paying job, increasing levels of responsibility, and ensuring that the family was taken care of. For the females, it was all about getting a toehold in the career world. It meant looking at delaying childbirth in favor of higher education. It meant fighting to be treated fairly and, oh my God, equitably. And the horrible realization that the times were quickly changing and childcare was no longer a family given. So against that backdrop, the raping and pillaging of Mother Earth and thinking about the long-term effects of their own living never entered the minds of any of the generations. Because, like most humans, we just don't spend much of our free time worrying about how to make the Earth better or, frankly, anything much outside of our own existence. Now, to be fair, the destruction of the Earth came into focus slowly. The instrumental temperature record shows the signal of rising temperatures that emerged in the tropical ocean in about the 1950s. Yet in the 1950s, very, very few worried about this. Why? Because higher education had yet to really take off, and changes in temperature recalculations and methodologies, that didn't happen until the latter part of the 70s. Computers for every man came into existence in the 80s. So quite a bit of what we know today about the early days of climate change only came into laser-sharp focus in the noughts. The years after the Y2K fiasco, the year of the 2000s. In the 1950s, a few scientists around the world were ringing the bell about the rising temperatures. However, no real consensus was gathered. And since there wasn't supersonic communication methods getting the messages out to the right hands or ears, well, that was almost next to impossible. In 1965, the U.S. President's Advisory Committee panel issued a warning that the greenhouse effect is a matter of quote-unquote real concern. Honestly, it got very little attention. And one other thing, these days we seem to have a constant stream of noise about doing good or doing better, right? Well, the truth is a lot of this began in the 1950s. And in the 60s, the companies that did take note of the climate issues did not have big enough kahunas to follow through on their wider ideals of protecting the planet. I'm looking at you, Exxon. Also, too many companies hired misinformation experts to direct consumer attention away from scientific facts. So, in the beginning of the 70s, we all believed that sugar was a good thing. You always need a good breakfast to sustain the body through the day. Smoking is most definitely not carcinogenic, and seatbelts and public safety, humbug, completely overblown. Now, this all sounds far-fetched today, right? That was the reality of the time. disinformation and misinformation was spewed by the corporations and the governments themselves. You might find it fascinating to know that a study released in 2016, just 6 years ago, after using the massive power of very modern computers and very educated scientists, definitively, for the very first time, determined that greenhouse gases began warming the world's oceans in the early 1800s, decades much earlier than previously thought. And to drive home the point even more, the early 1800s was the middle of the first industrial age. In other words, we were changing the chemistry of the atmosphere by adding CO2 to the air long before the second industrial age began. And my point in sharing this is to say that climate change was already well underway when the greatest generation was born in the early 1900s, and it wasn't making it anywhere near the top of anyone's priority list. And I think we can agree there is a general process that occurs. Whenever there is a new world something or other, first the scientists make their assessments, and they generally give the assessment results to the government, which then gives it to the citizens, who decide whether to vote it forward. Now, I realize this is a very simplistic view of how things work, but I'm saying it this way so that I can split this into four basic steps to show where the time gaps are. The brilliant scientists, they can generally do their assessments in a year or two. It might take up to 10 years for the government to accept that assessment and make it public. And it might be another 20 years before those assessments get studied fully and may be absorbed by the largest businesses. And it can take up to another 20 years for citizens and the smaller businesses to get behind the scientific results. In total, before the advent of computers, it could take up to 50 years before the citizens get behind a simple message. And here's what happened with climate change. It was identified in the 50s. 20 years later, in 1972, the UN held its first environmental conference. Climate change hardly registered on the agenda. That agenda centered on issues such as chemical pollution, atomic bomb testing, and whaling. You know, the big fishes in the ocean kind of whaling. The United Nations Environment Program came out of that conference. But it took another 10 years. In 1987, the Montreal Protocol agreed to restricting chemicals that damage the ozone layer. And although that was not established with climate change in mind, it has had the greatest impact on greenhouse gas emissions. Around about the same time, Margaret Thatcher, the UK Prime Minister and possessor of a chemistry degree, warned in a speech to the UN, "We are seeing a vast increase in the amount of carbon dioxide reaching the atmosphere. The results? It's going to change the future, likely to be much more fundamental and much more widespread than anything we have known hitherto." She called for a global treaty on climate change. Well, you see, up until the 1990s, very little everyday conversations occurred about carbon emissions, fossil fuel burning, climate change, or CO2 levels. It just wasn't what polite company discussed. And the fossil fuel industry was an enormous wealth generator to the economy. Increasing CO2 emissions was easily dismissed as having been caused by the dramatic increase in the human population. Remember, the boomers' baby boom was an increase of like times four. And seriously, since no one could stop human procreation, there really wasn't much anyone could do about it. So in business, fingers were pointed limply at the fossil fuel industry, and responsibility for anything other than fossil fuel was essentially ignored. The Kyoto Protocol was agreed to in 1997, but it took 8 years to become fully ratified by 2005. And even though 192 countries signed on to limit or reduce greenhouse emissions, the U.S. never got behind it, and Canada pulled out early. The Kyoto Protocol had a shelf life of just 15 years. And the Paris Agreement was signed by nearly all countries in 2015. Unfortunately, it sets itself up on a revolving 5-year cycle for simply limiting the global rise in temperatures to no more than 2 degrees Celsius. And there is one simple reason behind why I have very lightly covered the decades of history leading up to 2015. All of the world's governments could not agree on what was real, what was reasonable, and what could be done. So if the governments can't agree and the businesses prefer to ignore, how can anyone expect the global citizens to know what is going on? And if the global citizens hear spotty information from scientists, colleagues, governments, and companies, how on earth are they supposed to decide which way to move forward? I mean, we all know how difficult it is to rally one's colleagues and friends around an unpopular or possible expensive position. Imagine how horrid it must have been for those citizens living in countries where the government did not have a strong position. I'm looking at you, North America. So while in hindsight, none of us can argue that we were well on the way to destroying the world, saving the world did not become standard dinner table conversation until the 2000s. And here we are nearly 25 years in discussing it, making some changes, and yet so far off track, which is very normal. Because we humans take forever to make up our minds. So when 15-year-old Greta Thunberg started protesting in 2018, it was definitely not that she was wrong, nor was it that her message was wrong. I mean, no other generation had ever seen such a vocal, strident, and militant child of 15. No other generation had ever been called to account so loudly by anyone ever before. She was yelling to get someone's, anyone's full-on attention to do something. And I cut Greta a lot of slack because we humans react to jolts that shock our system. And Greta had the gift of not caring whether anyone liked her or not. And she didn't care whose feathers she ruffled by speaking the truth. She could see, as so many others, that the wheels of improvement were stuck, that we were not moving off the path of self-destruction. So she spoke up loudly and brought attention to the plight of the globe. Greta belongs to the Gen Z generation. Those are the kids born to the Gen Xers. Those are the kids that will soon inherit our very sick world. And they have every right to be worried because all studies seem to indicate that the world will be much less inhabitable when the Gen Zs are in their mid to late 40s. So if you think Greta was misdirected, misinformed, misbehaving, let me ask you this. What other way, what better way, what different way would you have preferred to be told? The truth. The real truth is always different from the truth we'd all much prefer to live in, isn't it? And our own truth is so much easier than the real truth. Yet another reason why I believe the best way forward is to figure out what works for the highest good of all. Right now, at this stage, you and I have now got the same base level of knowledge. We've got the 75,000-foot view kind of cemented in. so we can begin to figure out what some of the next steps are for exploring compassionate capitalism.